Hello, everybody. My name is Miles Hofacer.
And I am Lucy Davis.
And welcome to the inaugural episode of Too Many Toddlers with Technology.
We are graduate students at Texas Christian University pursuing our master's degree in speech-language pathology.
And as you could probably tell by the name, we are going to talk about technology. But we are going to talk about technology in a little bit different way. We're going to talk about technology in regards to neurodevelopment. We're going to talk about the brain. We're going to talk about what technology does with the brain. And we're going to talk about the implications for that in the field of speech language pathology, some ethical concerns. We are going to learn a little bit about how the brain, how technology affects the brain. But in order to know how technology affects the brain, we probably need to know what, Lucy? What do you think?
We first need to discuss how a typically developing brain functions, what happens from birth to three when the brain is developing, and what that process looks like in a typically developing child.
And so to do that, I reached out to someone I know really well. I grew up with him. He's my brother. His name is Rylan, or I'm sorry, I should say Dr. Rylan Hofacer, who got his PhD from the University of Cincinnati in neuroscience, and he did his thesis, or his entire purpose, this entire thing he did, that I don't want to get too sciencey with you guys, but it was really cool. He studied the effects of anesthesia on the brain from the population of 0 to 3 with mice. And so the guy knows how neurons develop in a brain. He's pretty smart with that. So in order to figure out Lucy's question on what happens with a typically developing brain and how that all works, reached out to him and asked him if he could go ahead and describe that for us.
Neurodevelopment is a pretty big topic, but when I think of neurodevelopment, I think of the wiring of the brain. So when you're born with too many neurons, and a lot of those neurons have to be pruned and eliminated, and the ones that are remaining have to make the right connections in the brain. And so during neurodevelopment, when you're thinking of an infant or a toddler, and they're learning to talk or they're learning to catch a ball, there's regions of their brain that are still kind of trying to figure out how to connect. And they need the right stimulus at the right time to make those neurons fire and make the strong connections. So if you think about speech and language and neurodevelopment, a big component of that, especially when the auditory cortex is developing, is they need to be able to, at the right age and right time, see language, see mouths move, hear language, and also talk themselves, and have all of that happen together so that network forms properly. When I think of things that can go wrong with neurodevelopment, you can think of depriving the brain of that stimulus that's needed, or giving it too much of a certain stimulus. So we used to do dark rear mice, and what happens is their visual cortex is not developed properly. It's completely behind schedule. It looks a little funny under a microscope, but it's because these mice that are 21 days of age have only experienced darkness, and it completely changes how that part of the brain, their visual cortex, forms. With this new world with technology all around us, it's important to remember that we're always humans and we have to interact with other people. And when we want our brains to wire properly, we have to remember what's essential to that, which is going to be interacting with each other, with our parents, with our siblings, for a proper neurodevelopment.
So, as Dr. Hofacer mentioned, a young developing brain is in a very fragile and critical period. And during its early period of life, neurons are essentially making or breaking it in these networks. And this is a really important period of development, and things can go either really right or really wrong during this early stage of life.
Yeah, like he's talking about the wiring of the brain and making the right connections at the right time, kind of like what you're talking about. And so something that I've always thought about in terms of technology is that human brains have been developing for like thousands and thousands of years, right?
Right.
So now all of a sudden we have this brand new stimulus of technology, like whether it be television that came out in the 50s, but not everybody had those. And then really the more pervasive one that everybody uses, like the iPhone and things like that. iPhone didn't come out until the middle of 2007. And that was barely over 10 years ago. And then after that, you had the iPad and you have all these things. They're like right in front of your face that you could always have technology going, right?
Correct.
I don't know. It's just, is technology too much stimulus? Like the other thing he was talking about with the mice and how mice, the study that he was talking about, how they put mice in the dark and the darkness affected their visual cortex. So kind of the same thing, you know, mice have been around for a long time. Now all of a sudden we just put them in darkness and see what happens to their brain, and the brain changes. Like how do you not think it's technology? Like how do you not think technology has some sort of effect? Like what do you think?
Therefore, if we're seeing that the darkness affects the visual cortex, there must be some type of transfer of a similar effect with other areas of the brain with things such as technology.
Could be, yeah. Granted, it's science, so we don't know until we test it, but I don't know. Sounds feasible to me. What do you think?
I think that we need to ask Dr. Hoofacer a few more questions to get some evidence to back up some of these questions that we have.
So that's what we did. We asked him if he could give an explanation on what could hinder neurodevelopment and asked him to specifically talk about what technology or like too much technology could do to hinder neurodevelopment.
I think as time goes on, we'll definitely get a better understanding of what technology can do to neurodevelopment overall. But I can tell you that I don't think that it is beneficial at specific points in development for kids who have these very different brains that are trying to make these connections and make them work. I don't think that technology enhances that process at all. I do think it can be almost too much of a good thing or a bad thing. If you think about it from the angle of too much of a good thing, their auditory cortex is being bombarded by blips and squeaks and whistles that never happen in the real world. And you have these hyperinflated voices that talk at these decibel levels and maybe have intentional speech issues for a humorous effect. And you have a child that they don't know how to process that because they're seeing it delivered from a cartoon mouse. On the bad side of it, there's the unnatural blue light that can come out of a television, or if it's from a radio, there's the lack of human interaction, which I think is key, especially in speech and language development. You have to see lips move. You have to see gestures when words are said. You have to see how the face looks. I think when you have aberrant neurodevelopment or improper neurodevelopment and you get something like mild autism or other cognitive deficits where you have kids who grow up to be individuals that can't tell the nuance between anger and frustration and grief, I think part of that can be affected by not seeing a human face behind the words or seeing a weird 3D cartoon face that really, you know, some poor animator can't make look the right amount of angry. And again, you know, these are sensitive brains, and if you never see an angry face, your idea of an angry face is, you know, Mickey Mouse when his tail is stepped on, and that's not good.
All right, so I think what Dr. Hofacer was talking about there was more like an extreme. Like, that's a situation with too much technology, with someone that has all that stimulus. I think that's what he's talking about, the dangers of that. But what I want to do is bring it back to talk about technology and speech language pathology, because that's what we're talking about, is technology in the area of speech language pathology and therapy. And so I don't think it's terribly bad if you're using it as extremes, because I mean, I myself have worked with my clients and I've used technology with my clients. Lucy, what about you? Have you ever used technology with your clients?
Yes, I've used technology as well in a few different ways. One of the ways is I had a client who was a child with autism, and we use technology through the form of video self-modeling, which we know has empirical evidence backing it up that it can be useful to teach an array of skills, but I was specifically using it to teach pragmatic skills, and which we know is a deficit among the population of autism.
Yeah, I've also used technology. I've done video modeling with I had a client with autism. We used video modeling. I've used iPads and technology to teach verbs, to teach different parts of language, to teach different languages. Used technology and iPads. There's a lot of apps that can be useful with a lot of disorders. So I've used it a few times, and I know we even have some colleagues that have used it. Lucy, do we have colleagues, right?
Correct. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Hodson's approach, but I use technology in that approach as well through voice memos on my iPhone as a form of auditory bombardment during my therapy sessions, as well as during a multiple oppositions approach, I use technology to create PowerPoint stories to read to my client who was cognitively impaired, and the technology aspect through crazy like transitions that are offered in PowerPoint were really useful to keep him attentive to a story.
Yeah, and I know some people that are listening to this have probably done the same thing, because technology can be really useful in therapy, and I think that there's a balance that we have to be mindful of, but we wanted to go ahead and get Dr. Hofacer's opinion on what he thinks about using technology for interventions, if he thinks it has a place, kind of like if he had parameters for it. So here's what he said about that.
Using technology for interventions or therapies with young kids, I don't know if we can make any conclusions as to whether it's good or bad. I think a lot of these kids that need interventions already have something a little different with their brains, but it does need to be considered when we're looking towards the future. Now, for one thing, if we're going to talk about the potential for good, kids love games, and I think if you're able to engage a child, especially a child with an attention disorder and they struggle focusing, making a therapy or an interventional treatment into a game for a short period can maybe work wonders, especially if it requires them to or rewards them for focusing and completing the task. When it comes to kind of the bad side of this, it's hard to understand the brain's inability, especially the developing brain's inability, to say no to some of the visual sugar that can be out there. And some of these interventional treatments, if they're not kind of thoroughly developed by teams to consider this aspect of harm, you can get an intervention or a therapy that completely immerses a kid in a technology world that removes them from the human aspect of the treatment, which is to correct a speech issue or a language issue or a processing issue. And at that point, you're almost better trying to find another route to do it. I think the sad thing is with the state of funding for a lot of science projects, they do want you, or for research projects, they do want you to include technology as a big boost to its applicability and shareability with other people in the field.
All right, so as Dr. Hofacer talked about studies, he talked about studies and research and how technology is becoming a big component of research and funding, but we decided to go a different route with our little lit review to see what we could find with research, and found a lot of studies, but wanted to present you guys the most salient studies in regards to technology with speech and language pathology, what we're all kind of used to. So the first study I want to talk to you guys about is a group that looked at narrative skills. And they looked at narrative skills in children, and they showed them shows, educational shows, and things like that. And they found that exposure to well-developed educational programming can enhance story knowledge and narrative skills. And they looked at economically disadvantaged preschoolers. So that's one thing. That's kind of cool. That's a positive finding for technology and speech and language development. Lucy, you found one. Which one did you find?
So some researchers at Cincinnati looked at brain connectivity, and their paper is titled "Brain Connectivity in Children is Increased by the Time They Spend Reading Books and Decreased by the Length of Exposure to Screen-Based Media." So the title speaks for itself, because the results indicated that time spent reading was positively correlated in the left side of the brain, which is also known as the language center, as well as the visual and cognitive control regions. And on the flip side, screen time was related to lower connectivity related to the language and cognitive control center of the brain.
And then one more study, and if anybody that's listening to this and knows Lucy or I personally and wants to read some of these studies, just ask us or shoot us an email. But the last one was a longitudinal study that was done with Hispanic children, and they looked at screen time and how it affected their language outcomes. And they basically found that children that had a higher number of screen time, that basically meant that their language development suffered. So essentially, the more screen time, the worse the language; the less screen time, the better the language. And this study also looked at content. So it looked at children picking the content and adults picking the content. And what's kind of funny is if there was the child directed content. So basically, if the kid picked what they wanted to watch, that had an effect of having poor language skills. On the other hand, if the parent picked out what media they wanted their kid to listen to or watch, that was probably a little bit more educational and had a little bit more of a structure, then that was more correlated to higher language outcomes. So that was a longitudinal study that I think was a really good one, that looked at a bunch of different things. And the most important thing that came up with was that a lot of screen time is bad for language, but we also have to look at parents or adults or guardians giving what they think is good programming, and it probably is better than what children would pick. That also has an effect. So that leads us to, we have a little bit of arguments on both sides. Once again, I have a lot more articles in my pocket, as does Lucy, if anybody wants to read them. But we decided that we would ask Dr. Hulfacer if he thinks that it is ethical, and what would be kind of the ethical implications or concerns with using technology in therapy and in general learning. Because Lucy, we know that it's everywhere, right? They're going to use it in classrooms?
Correct. I think it would be hard to completely remove technology from your life and even your therapy and clinical practice in the 21st century in the world that we live in. It's such a pervasive and dominant part of our world.
It is. And especially now that pretty much all classrooms use them in some shape or form. So the question that we want to ask, though, specifically for us, is in terms of intervention, what's the ethical concerns, or does he have any ethical concerns with using it in intervention?
I do have some ethical concerns about the use or potential for overuse of technology in learning, specifically in the classroom. And I think part of the problem has been that for the past few years, we believe technology is the savior and it advances learning and it disrupts the traditional classroom model. But I think in pushing this forward, we forget that, you know, learning takes many forms. Part of it can be synthesizing new information. Part of it is reciting information. It can be tactile. It can be something you hear. It can be something you participate in. And technology, every part of it taking place on an iPad where you don't have to use your skills to open a book and search for a word, or you don't have to write words out anymore and you just type them into a keyboard. I don't know if, in my personal opinion, I don't know if that's good for a child. I think time will tell, especially as we begin to gather information on the kids that have grown up knowing only iPads in the classroom, as to whether or not that's good. I also don't know if it's healthy for children to stare at the light that emits from these devices all day. I know as I've gotten older, I think a lot of people my age can speak to the fact that staring at blue light all day can really wear your eyes out. And I think that's another concern to think about, is that these kids will just be staring at monitors all day, and that's far from healthy. But it's ethically, we really do need to consider how pervasive technology is in the classroom.
All right, so Dr. Hulfacer brought up the fact that he's got some concerns with it. He's got some ethical concerns. He brings up some really good points on how pervasive it is, and I don't know, he's got some good points on it. What do you think?
I think that he makes a good point about the overuse, and you know, as we all day to day, how much we come in contact with technology, we all use it a lot, and so I just think we need to be very careful about utilizing it, especially with these young developing minds, and careful not to overuse it and the content that we're using it through.
So that being said, the grand question is, do you think for therapy, do you think it's ethical?
I do think it's ethical if it's used with the correct content and appropriate duration.
So like Lucy said, the most important things that we have to remember about technology that we kind of found out was content matters and dosage matters. So, you guys that are listening to this, take that forward in therapy, just in your interactions with kids that you may have as close relatives, things like that. know that there's some parameters with technology, and it's pervasive and it's not going to go away, but we at least have some ground rules to work in. And yeah, that's it for the day. Lucy?
I'm Lucy Davis.
And I'm Miles Hofacer.
And we would like to thank you for listening to Too Many Toddlers with Technology.
That's it. Y'all have a great day. Thank you for listening. Bye. All right, I think that went well.
I think it went well too.
High five.